For Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with host Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome to this week's episode of Batter Up. I'm Caleb Johnson here with you on the week of June the 1st with Joe Patrick. Joe, how's it going, man?
Well, at least May is behind us, right? The Braves it was funny. Mark Bowman was talking last night in the post-game press conference to Brian Snicker and the players, and he was catching them all by surprise by acknowledging that the Braves actually had a winning record in the month of May when they went 13-12, which everybody was surprised by that, especially after, obviously, the tumultuous weekend that we saw unfold. That was kind of surreal, honestly, especially that Saturday. We're going to dig into all of it here, but, you know, what a crazy, in a bad way, weekend for the Braves. Can't imagine things being much worse than they were that Saturday night, especially.
See, Joe, you say that, and I think back of earlier in the week last week, where it was like, surely things can't get any worse. It wasn't right. necessarily how the team was playing. It was the Braves got some news or some not so news on Mike Soroka, which we'll discuss later. And on that Friday, you know, I think you and I texting back and forth, being like, I mean, what is going on? This is just, man, between this news, between a broken hand or broken fingers from Marcell Ozuna, you're thinking, this cannot get any worse. So I am hesitant, Joe, to say that at this point, because honestly, from what we've seen from the Braves this season, it can, and sometimes most often will, get worse.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the cruel, like, irony. I don't know if I never know if I'm using the word irony in the right way,
but
the irony of Marcell Ozuna already being out, the team trying to figure out how they're going to deal with him being, you know, 2 to 3 months away. Who knows, honestly, how long it would have come for him to come back from broken fingers for a hitter like that. You never know how something like that, how the swing will kind of get back in action after that kind of injury. And then, obviously, what happened Saturday night, for anybody who hasn't really been paying attention to what's going on.
You were hiding under a rock.
The reports actually came out. Obviously, Marcell Ozuna was charged with, I should probably have the proper verbiage in front of me, but I don't. It was aggravated assault, strangulation of his wife at their residence. Happened in the middle of the day, and on Twitter, there was... it started to leak out. There was somebody had a picture of him in cuffs, it looked like.
Yeah, it looked like apparently whoever quote unquote reported on this was must be a next door neighbor.
Yeah.
Because they took the photo through a window and you could kind of see this, you know, peeking through a window to catch. And I know, Joe, I said something to you when you initially put it in our group chat that we were having this discussion. I immediately opened the photo and looked for a cast because it was like, well, he's got a broken hand, so this couldn't have occurred because he's got a broken hand. Mm-hmm. And then you see the photo and you see this bright neon yellow, like the sleeve that he's worn, and wow, that just popped in my head that I'm thinking there's about to be a promotion canceled by the Braves. But you see this neon green yellow cast in handcuffs, I think to kind of start this discussion, which anyone who has to have this discussion understands the sensitive nature of it, understands the fact that this is not a fun conversation to have in any form or fashion. I think it is necessary because it's what the Braves are dealing with right now, but that is. You have to, we're going to separate, I believe, a dealing with the incident that happened, the horrificness of it, and then how it's going to affect the Braves. Because as much as it may seem insensitive to discuss contract negotiations and, you know, who takes over in left field. But those things,
that,
I mean,
there's an interest that the fans have. Yeah, I totally understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and it is one of those that, like, life for the Braves does have to move on.
Right. Right.
After this happens. And so initially, just what goes on in my head is that we first received news about it Saturday night, and it was in the middle of the Braves-Mets game. At least that's when I first saw it. I don't know, Joe, did it come out any earlier than that?
I saw the picture. So I wasn't working that day, so I wasn't paying as close attention as I normally would be. But yeah, I guess I saw it while the game was going on. But I guess I wasn't even paying that close attention to the game. I was actually just flipped open Twitter and saw the picture. And then, yeah, I just want to say, you know, to kind of echo your sentiment, what you were saying earlier, it's like, we're going to have a discussion about this, but I mean, make no mistake that, you know, our first priority, I think when I saw, you saw, when we learned about this news, is you just feel so terrible that this situation happened, that people were hurt, that, you know, hurt physically and, you know, emotionally. You just hope that people can recover from this, because it's a situation that is honestly heartbreaking. And as somebody who, you know, is in media, who's, you know, I've talked to Marcelo Ozuna, you know, in press conferences, or been witness at least to him, you know, talking with media and things like this, it seems surreal, because he's a happy-go-lucky guy when we've talked to him, and he clearly is dealing with things off the field that that kind of, I think, turn him into a different person, or bring out a different side of him that we don't see when we're covering him in a professional setting. In a professional setting, he's always been really kind of lighthearted and willing to share stories and be, you know, laud his teammates with praise. And so it's just kind of shocking in that respect. But make no mistake that, you know, despite the fact that we're going to talk about some of the ramifications that this has for the team in terms of on the field, off the field, all that kind of stuff, you know, our thoughts are just with everybody involved in the situation, and you just hope that everybody can move on past it as easily as they can.
Yeah, I think for me too, it's seeing the police report, seeing what Marcelo Ozuna has been accused of, are kind of what I said earlier. I mean, these are truly horrific things. I mean, specifically laying out, and I think how it was laid out in the police report is actually going to be pretty helpful for how this case is dealt with, in that it states the police witnessed Marcel Ozuna strangling and physically harming his wife. And so however they go about deciding to deal with that, there seems to be some evidence. I don't know that we're ever going to get that evidence as media, as fans. You know, I think, Joe, you mentioned kind of earlier a situation of, is this going to be like Ray Rice with the Baltimore Ravens, where we were able to see video footage? I don't know that we'll get any body cam footage, anything like that, but just the fact of, this is what's been laid out for us, that he committed these actions and there were witnesses to these actions. Based on that information, I immediately jumped to, this is unacceptable. This is not how not even just a professional, but just, this is not how a man acts. Mm-hmm. And so it's extremely disappointing. And I'm with you that the surrealness of it all is just like, what? I mean, this guy, but it also kind of, I think too, kind of reminds you of, anyone is capable of anything. And just because you think of someone in a certain light doesn't necessarily mean that's how they are in their personal life. I do think also kind of moving this towards, you know, the reality of how it's going to affect the Braves. I will say this. I strongly believe we've seen the last of Marcel Ozuna in an Atlanta Braves uniform. I think it's highly likely we've seen the last of Marcel Ozuna in a Major League Baseball uniform, just because what was laid out in that police report, although it has to be proven in a court of law for the criminal charges, that's not how it plays out in Major League Baseball, where they can make decisions for themselves. And we've had those examples in the past of players committing domestic violence infractions, and we never see them again.
Mm-hmm. To go back to your point about the police witness being witness to this assault, I mean, that really makes it a unique circumstance that isn't necessarily the case in a lot of other domestic violence incidents where you have, you know, it's more of a he said, she said type of situation. And that gives sometimes the accused party of being, you know, just having some, you know, there being some darkness that can give them some leeway in terms of, you know, rebuilding their image with another team, or just kind of being able to restart things, like we've seen with some other players. It's going to be very hard for Marcelo Zuna in this case, like you said, because there was that police witness. You know, it could get really bad for him. If there is body cam footage of the incident, it's going to make it even worse for him. And I totally agree with you that I don't see him playing for the Braves. You never say never, but I would put it at like 99.9999% chance that he never plays for the Braves again. And again, like you said, if there's evidence of this that people can see with their own eyes, it's going to be very hard for any team to have the, you know, just to be able to try to roster this guy, you know, and make that case to your fans. It's almost impossible. It's just really, really bad. And I also just do wonder, you know, we've seen a report from The Athletic come out talking about his contract situation and whether the Braves might be able to void it and get their money back on, you know, past where we are now. And that the article lays out that it is really well done by Ken Rosenthal and David O'Brien, who's a contributor to it, saying that, you know, it's very off. It's not as easy as this guy, you know, somebody commits domestic violence and you get out of their contract. And in fact, it's the opposite. In most cases, it's very, you don't get out of these contracts despite this kind of behavior. But I do think that the police witness thing is one thing that is just very unique to this situation that doesn't exist in a lot of these other situations that they put forward in the article as evidence of why the Braves might not be so easy for them. You know, because the police witness, you know, that's going to make it a lot easier to potentially put Marcelo Zuna in prison. I mean, and this is like the kind of stakes we're talking about here with this. Yeah. He could very well serve a prison sentence for this incident. Which is just crazy. But if he does that, you know, that would definitely seem like a difference in term for the Braves actually having a legal, you know, a legal leg to stand on here. It's just a crazy situation. So what will likely happen going forward, Major League Baseball is doing an investigation. I know a lot of Braves fans wanted him to be released immediately, and I totally understand that sentiment. I felt the same way. Like, you know, I totally understand where that comes from. But right now, what the Braves have to do is let this investigation take place, let some of these legal proceedings take place, and then they can decide where to go from there. But what's likely to happen is that Major League Baseball will probably spend a couple months investigating this and put out almost certainly a suspension on Marcelo Zuna. I think that the suspension, just based on what we know from the incident and the evidence that they're likely to have because of their ability to just talk to the police that were witness to the situation directly, I think that we're going to see the hardest sentence that we've ever seen for a player in this instance. I think the harshest suspension that we've seen for a domestic violence incident is one full season, 162 games. And I could definitely see them coming down with a suspension that's the rest of the season and next year and all of next season. And whatever the suspension does end up being, the Braves will not have to pay that is an unpaid suspension served by players. So the Braves would be out whatever is in the contract terms for the length, the duration of this suspension. So they will definitely be not having to pay him for the foreseeable future, at least, you know, for almost certainly the rest of the season and potentially, you know, into next year, if not all of next year. But yeah, I mean, we'll know more. I wish I could say more about it. I wish we could talk about this subject with more certainty. But honestly, right now, there's just still so much more that needs to come out that we just don't know yet. There was an affidavit that was released yesterday I was reading up on that I think WSB had reported on here locally that basically expresses the statements from both the accuser and the accusee of just what happened. Just a crazy incident that just escalates so quickly into something that never should happen. It's kind of disturbing in that sense. But I would just, if anyone wants to know more about the case, just Google that stuff and I'm sure you can find it. But there's just so much more that has to take place before we know for certain what's going to happen with regards to his contract situation and his status with the Braves.
Well, and here's one thing, Joe, that just kept circulating through my mind when the news dropped is, here's one it's such a messed up thing about the situation. The Braves have experience dealing with this before.
Yeah.
Because back in 2015, it wasn't 2015. I can't remember the year, but Hector Oliveira, who was a big signing, defected from Cuba, signed with the Dodgers. The Braves traded for Oliveira, and it was a weird situation where, like, he was supposed to be the next big star for the mm-hmm. Braves, even though I was reminded recently from someone that he was, like, 30 years old at the time, which is actually how old Marcell Ozuna is. And Oliveira, to start out the season, they go on a road trip. He gets into some form of domestic violence altercation with a woman and never plays for the Braves again. He serves an 82-game suspension, gets traded essentially so the Braves can get a player and kind of offset some money. I think the Padres were willing to put up the money up front for the Braves to take Matt Kemp and spread that money out over a few years. So it's one of those unfortunate and bizarre situations where the Braves actually have experience dealing with this same type of issue. And it's, I think from the Braves organization, it's a weird situation where it's, hey, good to have the experience, but man, the fact that you have the experience and you're going through this again is terrible. And for the fans who are once again, it looks like, robbed of a big free agent signing. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a guy brought in who we were all excited about, who, you know, I think for this season hadn't put up the numbers on the field that we had expected, having the injury, the broken fingers offset things even further, to then add this to it. I feel so bad for the fans who are just once again going through this again. The other thing was, I think specifically, and I tweeted about this on Saturday, I felt so bad for Braves players who on Saturday were essentially forced to, in a roundabout way, have to speak on an incident that they had absolutely nothing to do with, that they had no more information than we did, but with media looking for a quote, I feel for the guys who had to ask about it because it's a big issue going on, but then even more so for the players who had to answer. It's a lose-lose situation all around that's just kind of compiled a Braves season that I feel like we're heading towards a, I just want to forget this entire year.
Yeah, I know. It feels like the culmination of what has been like a season where the engine just cannot get firing, and it's like the wheels are falling off at this point. I do want to go back to the Oliveira thing that you brought up. He was arrested in 2016, he ended up being convicted of a misdemeanor assault and battery and served 90 days in prison for that. What Ozuna is being accused of is a felony, and I think it's because of the strangulation and the assault with the cast. So he's facing right now, that's what Oliveira was eventually convicted of, the misdemeanor. We don't know whether Ozuna will actually be convicted of the felony that he's been accused with, or, you know, if something else will happen. And again, that's why we just kind of have to wait and see what happens there. But, you know, Brian Snicker was asked about this, and, you know, he said this is not like anything I've had to deal with. You know, he wasn't the manager at that time. The players, I'm sure so many of them were not around in 2016. I'm trying to think, Freddie Freeman may be the only one who was kind of involved in that situation tangentially. So, you know, it's just one of those things where I kind of wonder if something like this could actually be a bit of like a wake-up call for some players, you know, just like, you know, when something traumatic happens in your life and you kind of reassess things, it happens to all of us in various ways, not necessarily with like a domestic violence incident amongst like a colleague or something, but, something traumatic happens and you kind of look yourself in the mirror and you kind of approach life or work or relationships differently or whatever. I do wonder if maybe that could come into effect here with some of these Braves players. And, you know, when you look at Marcelo Ozuna with what he was doing on the field, he had a zero war. Like, he was basically a replacement level player so far this season. So you obviously were hoping that he was going to break out and become a more productive player on the field for the Braves. But in terms of what you're losing from the lineup as it exists right now, you know, you got to say that it's not like you're actually losing a ton. And maybe his underperformance is partially what has led to the Braves being, you know, underperformers overall this season. But it will certainly be interesting to see how the Braves go forward with this. I don't think they're going to make a splashy trade in the near term, if they make one at all this season. I think that, you know, well, we can talk about this a little bit later. Why don't we let this lead it? So we can cover Mike Soroka. Brian Snicker talked about Mike Soroka on Friday to MLB Network's Chris Russo. Mad Dog said he was going to be out for the year. Twice, I think he said in that interview, and then later in the day, he's like, "Oh, my bad, I made a mistake. He's not out for the year." I tend to think that Brian Snicker knew what he was talking about a little bit. He said when he apologized that he had just seen Soroka in the little scooter type thing, and he just assumed. I have the feeling that it's a little bit more than just an assumption as the reason why he said that, and he said it so kind of confidently.
Oh, no, I think this was definitely a situation where Mike Soroka's agent and team, you know, around him, his camp, however you want to phrase that, was just like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, you can't, you can't be putting that out there before we go to the doctors and make this thing official, because I'm sure that affects money in some way. Yep. You know, like, all of these little things go on. And I think that was when I saw Brian Snicker apologize. I felt like that was grandpa. Like, that was grandpa who just saw Soroka and was like, "Oh yeah, that, you know, I'm sorry, bud. That's gonna be it." And then goes on and it's like, "Yeah, he's not gonna play for us." And then they're like, "Grandpa, you can't say that, you know." Yeah. And it's like, Oh, my bad.
And Snicker, as the manager, is the one who would really ultimately have the final say as to, like, whether he's going to come in and pitch. And, you know, Snicker is probably thinking to himself, "I'm not gonna," he had exploratory surgery on May 17th. "I'm not going to be putting him back out there, even if he is feeling healthy." You know, he's probably thinking in his head, like, "No, like, we'll throw, if you, God bless you. Hopefully, I hope to dear Lord, you recover and become, you know, the same pitcher you were, but we're not going to risk you this year at all."
Exactly.
And so that risk is kind of what I want to tie back to the Ozuna situation. But Mike Soroka here is involved as well, as players that we're not going to see again for the Braves this season. And so, to me, what Alex Anthopoulos in this front office has to figure out how to manage this year is how much risk they want to take in I always call it the transfer window, because I kind of have a background in soccer, but, like, you know, it is kind of the same thing. Like, this trade window that gets really hot, this hot stove period that happens, you know, in July and especially in late July. How, you know, first of all, are they financially even capable of adding to the payroll and being able to bring in an outfielder that could take Marcelo Ozuna's place, or a pitcher who could take the place of, you know, Mike Soroka, who they know they're not going to get back this year? Or do they try to, like, just keep on rolling with some of these guys that they already have rostered, guys like Bryce Wilson? You know, I think that with these two situations, they're very different in terms of, on the pitching side, you have players who have legitimate experience at the major league level that you feel like you may be able to trust going forward, that could assume some of those duties, as opposed to in the outfield, you really just don't have the same level of major league experience combined with kind of the pedigree that they have. And so I think that this all just comes down to a risk assessment in terms of how much they want to actually push this year. And, you know, that's where it gets kind of depressing as a Braves fan, where it's like, are we looking at not necessarily a tank of a season, but, like, we're probably just looking at a season. The way I'm looking at it is, like, we're just probably looking at a season where these things have gone wrong. There's not a lot you're going to do to make yourself a World Series contender this year in a trade market and in a situation where you don't have a lot of money to add to the payroll. So this is kind of the group you're just going to have to roll with and make as much fun of it as you can. But this is going to be it. That's kind of how I'm feeling.
I was about to say, I mean, I don't think it's very hot takey of me to say the Braves aren't making any positive moves at the trade deadline. They're not going to make any splashes. I would honestly, I'm at the point now, I would be shocked, I would be stunned if the Braves make any moves at the deadline that benefit them. Because this is not the kind of team that you expect to win a World Series. I mean, my goodness, if you look at previous teams the Braves have had and put together, and the fact of the moves that were made to try to help them win were oftentimes very incremental and things that were going to be helpful, but there's been no big splashes made. If there was ever a year to make a big splash, I would believe the 2020 season would be that, where, you know, we were all, me, you, and Willie P, are sitting around talking about, are they going to push for a Mike Clevenger trade,
right,
or some other type of big deal? And the fact that that didn't happen then, you're looking at a team now who's now down Marcell Ozuna, Travis d'Arnaud, Freddie Freeman's not hitting like he has before.
Travis d'Arnaud seems like a lifetime ago.
Exactly. You know, and you're now working with a catcher who great at the plate on offense, behind the plate. Whoo, man, there are some improvements that need to be made, but he's young, so you understand it. But you combine all of these things with the fact that maybe your third baseman, who you were potentially ready to trade at one point, is one of your best offensive pieces, that, like, no, we will see. I mean, right now, obviously, the Braves being in second in the East, and that's only based on the fact that the Mets have played, what, I think, five less games?
Yeah.
So, like, combining...
And they have a ton of injuries.
Yeah, combining all of these things going on, I think it's not even... You can't even look at just your division now because of how the division has ended up playing out. You have to think, just to win the division is great, but are there going to be any real playoff push with this team? I say no. And so, I've seen different in the past, where the Braves had spent money, so there's absolutely no reason this year to spend money. I think I'm with you, Joe. I think this is the exact team, even potentially looking at maybe selling off some options and kicking the can down for the 2022 season, is unfortunately where we're at, where I'm back in a position of, hey, let's enjoy the season while we're here, but expectations, I'm not doing that for the postseason.
Yeah, it's really tough right now. And so I think that there's one thing that the Braves could do to kind of salvage what has been an absolute mess of a season and get a win, you know, get a dub, and that is to sign Freddie Freeman to an extension. I think that if anything, that this Marcell Ozuna situation has exposed is, like, how fortunate the Braves have been over so many years to have somebody like Freddie Freeman that can be kind of the face of the franchise, a guy who's going to give you MVP caliber type of offense, you know, production on the field, and also just be a guy who, you know, you really trust to be the kind of team leader in the clubhouse, the guy who, you know, is not, you know, obviously going to get in trouble or anything like that. And just, you know, I just feel like his value really comes, you know, it becomes a lot more clearer in the wake of all this. And I think that that would be at least something that could settle the nerves a little bit among the fan base. I mean, I think that the expectations right now amongst Braves fans are as low as, you know, they've ever been since, you know, probably going back to, like, before 2019, honestly. So the one thing you could possibly do that would, you know, make you feel a little bit better as a Braves fan is to know that one of your best players and, you know, this guy that's been a lifer for the club is locked down, and you no longer have to worry about that. Now, to your point about the trade deadline, maybe they do have to sell somebody, or I'm sorry, trade a player. I say sell again because of soccer transfers. Yeah, no, but, like, you know, maybe they get rid of some payroll in order to be able to help them facilitate that deal. But I just feel like they have to get that done. If you let this whole season unfold the way it's unfolded, let's just say it doesn't result in a playoff appearance, like is probably going to be the case at this point. And then you let Freddie Freeman walk away. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing as a franchise? Like, how are you inspiring your fan base at all to get excited about this club if you let this kind of stuff happen? Like, I feel like getting Freddie Freeman signed now is even more important than it's ever been in the past. And it's always been one of the top priorities for this club. But I just feel like they cannot let this opportunity, let this moment pass them by and just, you know, continue to operate as they have been.
Are you sure? Now, I'm with you, Joe, in that signing Freddie Freeman right now to an extension would be a good distraction, would be a good positive distraction to kind of turn away from the chaos and the negativity that's happened here in just the last weekend, but obviously going back much further than that. Are you sure, though, that locking up Freddie Freeman locks up your success long term? I mean, Freddie Freeman is not old by any standards, but I don't know. I think I get caught in a situation where I keep wondering, is this deal not done because the Braves don't want the number of years that Freeman's camp does? Mm. I think we've talked about it a little bit before, and I've been very careful, especially just because, you know, I don't want to come out hot takey and seem insane here, but it's not that crazy to think that Freddie Freeman's best days are behind him. I know, like, and I'm not saying he's just going to go off a cliff and he's going to be some terrible player, but I do wonder if those thoughts are going on in the Braves' minds. However, I am in a position now where the Ozuna news could change that for them. It could be this scramble of, we need some consistency. We need something that we know we're going to have. Because, I mean, if there's anything, you talk about what this team has. Well, this team has Ronald Acuna. They have a guy who's, what, either leading or currently tied for the most home runs in Major League Baseball. He is the future face. I mean, I say future face. He is the face of this team. I know Freddie Freeman won an MVP just a season ago, and so it seems insane for me to say that.
No, I understand what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, but like, this is the moving forward, that the Major League Baseball promotions, all of these things, like, he is that guy to carry this team. But it's not, I mean, you know, it's one of those, I kind of bounce around and I'm thinking to myself, it's not like I just want any old person to be playing first base. Like, having Freddie Freeman there is huge. It's just,
if it were Ronald Acuna, for example, just like hypothetically, if it were Ronald Acuna that we were worried about signing a contract that didn't have one locked down, I would just feel the same exact way about it.
Yeah.
The Braves, to me, need to lock down their core of players. And I think it's easy to forget, actually, that Freddie Freeman is still, like, somewhat young, like, just based on the fact that he's been around so long. He's 31 years old. He still has, you know, we were having a similar conversation about Chipper Jones when he was, like, 35, yeah, as to, like, whether the Braves should need to be giving him a longer contract. So, you know, I still think that there's plenty of good years in Freddie Freeman. He's fit as anything, yeah, anybody out, well, there, you know, and he's such an important figure in the club. I mean, I'm not saying that you're against, like, you don't think we need to resign. No. Like, well, everybody thinks that we need to resign Freddie Freeman, but I just feel like it's something that is even more imperative to get done, maybe sooner rather than later. I think maybe potentially before a lot of this happened, maybe the thinking was, we will actually go to the offseason, we will finish the season, then try to, you know, get something done. But I think that now with everything that's transpired, it just makes it, to keep fans on board, I think it makes a lot of sense to try to, you know, maybe change your perspective on things to be able to come to an agreement here sooner.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of those, I want to talk about it, but then not sound like a crazy person where I'm just like, oh, the Atlanta Braves don't need Freddie Freeman. Like, it's one of those, I mean, he is a great cornerstone of this team.
I know what you mean.
But there is a point where you're kind of like, there is going to be an after of Freddie Freeman, you know, and it's one of those. And honestly, in 2021, Freddie Freeman's importance to this team has been more about viral, you know, views of Charlie Freeman than it has been Freddie himself doing stuff. Like, that's been more of the discussion. And I know that might cause some people's headache to explode for me to say that, but it's the truth. And so I think you have to have that moment of realizing that this isn't I'm not giving Freddie Freeman an 8 to 10 year contract like other guys are getting right now. And I think that's probably what is the issue here going on. However, I think in us having this discussion and kind of getting it back to where it initially came from is, does Marcell Ozuna's issue cause that to change? I think so. I think I'm with you that I think the Braves are like, yeah, we need to do something because there needs to be that perception change. Otherwise, you end up in a situation like other teams in this same city have had, where you go to games and not too many fans in the stands and not too many excitement around the team after you were just like a year ago, Joe, where one went away from the World Series. Like, it's just
innings away, like outs away, you know?
Yeah. It's just difficult to talk about.
The Braves are in a situation right now where the waters are extremely choppy and there's holes in the boat and they're trying to plug these holes and, like, you know, get. And to me, that would just be a big stabilizer of a move, would be to get that deal done. But I agree with you. Obviously, there's, you know, that the reason why it's not done yet is because obviously the Braves are concerned about, you know, the ramifications that that signing will have going forward. So anyway, I just want to kind of put that out there. I think it's something that comes into light even more at this point in time, considering what a absolutely tumultuous weekend it was. And we haven't even touched on the Braves losing 13-2 to the division leader. But, you know, it almost seems kind of trivial to talk about baseball with all of this going on. But, you know, at least they didn't have to face DeGrom, I guess, the next day on Sunday. Maybe that's the one, you know, silver lining to it all. But yeah. What a rough weekend.
It's been so bizarre just because I think that the Braves have played four games since we last talked a week ago, which just is bizarre because you obviously had the additional days off that were already scheduled. You get two games that get rained out. You're right in that luckily for the Braves, they get to avoid DeGrom, but also had to deal with Drew Smyly. Oh, shocker. Once again, he doesn't look great. And then Ian Anderson being off. It's like, come on. That's why, I mean, it's one of those, we're right back to having the discussion of, I've been saying for a while that Ian Anderson was the consistent piece on this team, especially, you know, as far as pitching goes. But you, I think, Joe, you had been kind of pushing me in that, no, we really need to be looking at Charlie Morton. And then what do we get? We get two wins this week from the Braves. Both happen with Charlie Morton on the mound because he was consistent enough outside of, I think he had one bad inning, a fourth inning that kind of got away from him a little bit, similar to what we've seen from him in the past, where his numbers are truly much better than what was the production on the field. He's been another thing kind of holding this pitching staff together as they, you talk about, I mean, choppy waters. I'm thinking this is, this is bad storms.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Choppy waters. This is, you know, getting towards we're approaching tropical storm, not yet at hurricane type waters that has been just so difficult for the Braves to overcome, and yet they have an opportunity to tonight to put a couple wins together again with Max Fried, who, cross your fingers, continues to look good and doesn't regress, like, everything is so up in the air.
I know. And, you know, thank goodness Max Fried has looked better since he came back from that early season injury. And he is a guy who tends to pitch better when he's on long rest, but this is, like, extremely long rest for him. I think he's on, like, 6 days or 7 days or something like that, because he got pushed back a couple times. So, but, you know, Brian Snicker actually talked about it last night, said he still, you know, feels confident he'll get the same guy. But yeah, I mean, this is an opportunity for them to rack up some wins here at home. Again, they've been playing a lot of home games early on the season here, and they honestly have not really taken advantage of it like you know might expect a team to play at home. So fortunately, they actually have been a little bit better on the road than a lot of teams in baseball. So I don't know. It's so weird because right now, with the lack of games having been played, and obviously this whole Ozuna situation kind of bubbling up and kind of, you know, putting a shadow over everything, it's like almost hard to remember what is actually going on in the season with the Braves. And like last night almost felt like watching the Twilight Zone or something happen where like the Braves are just like continuing to play games despite the fact that, you know, this huge story is kind of looming over everything that's going on.
Yeah, well, so I guess as far as games, you talk about this as a stretch that the Braves can rack up some wins. Joe, they got to play the Dodgers this week.
Yeah, well, after this National Series, it gets, it's not pretty.
No, I think that's one of those tough situations where You've got, you know, a division opponent that you're going to finish out with three more games. And then you move on to the Dodgers. And then you talk about, oh, the Braves really haven't had too many road games. Well, then they get that test next week at Philly and at Miami. So it's just, I feel like every time we come in and discuss, it's like, let's see what they do this week.
Yeah, I know. Seriously, it's like you don't know whether it's going to be, it's like a it's like just going up and down like crazy. Like they've had so many streaks of like losing four in a row, winning four in a row, or losing three, winning three, you know. It's been crazy, and it just seems like every time, like right now, they're at 25-26, one game below 500. Seems like every time they get to that 500 mark, it's like a dip down again. It's like they just can't break that barrier. So maybe we'll see that, but
yeah,
who knows? Right now, I'm like my mode has totally changed watching this team, where it's like I'm like again, just after the one game last night, it's like I'm not actually as like stressed about whether they're going to win or lose a game. I'm just like trying to just like take the games for what they are now because it's just your mode, your mindset kind of changes after everything that happened.
That's why I was saying earlier I am no longer looking at the Atlanta Braves for aspirations and going, this is a team that could achieve X. I am now back at, you know, let's have fun out there, boys. let's have a good time. You know, I think it'll be probably a little bit easier if, as a fan, if I want to go to a couple of games and, you know, just sit in the upper deck and enjoy things, not take it so seriously, because why bother? Why, honestly, for anyone out there who is a diehard Braves fan or just a, you know, an average Braves fan, semi interested or whatever, don't stress over this team. Don't do it, John Chuckery. Don't go out there ready to blow a gasket over a decision that Brian Snicker has made. I feel like, Joe, you and I, it's going to be very difficult for us to come on here and be like, well, Joe, I mean, come on.
I know.
That move that Snit did last night.
Yeah.
I mean, what is he thinking? Now, I've seen some of that happen on Braves Twitter a little bit, but I feel like we are going to get to a point where it's just, let's appreciate this, guys. Let's have fun. You know, Ronald Acuna, man, what a guy.
Yeah, right.
What a guy.
Yeah.
It's just, it's unfortunate, but it's honest in where we are. Is there anything, Joe, you want to add before we get out of here?
No, well, I wanted to get out of here. There was one thing we want to talk about that you had mentioned, brought up before we started, which was like fans coming back in the stadium. I'm interested to have this conversation. We will try not to keep it too long. We've been going for about 45 minutes. We can keep it under an hour for sure. But well, lead us off here.
Okay, so that's, you are right, and I'm glad you mentioned this, because I had kind of, I guess, slightly forgotten with all of the bad news that we're kind of getting through is something I've been seeing, and I think, well, not just me, everyone's been seeing, is we are reaching a point where fans back in the stands, and now, specifically in the NBA, and I think partially has to do with the fact that in the NBA specifically, fans are closer to the action that they are in Major League Baseball, but we're getting all of these, you know, popcorn being thrown, a water bottle was thrown at Kyrie Irving the other night, a fan, I believe it was last night, ran out onto the court of one of the games, Trae Young, Atlanta zone, was spit on at a game in New York. I was curious of, Joe, do you see this as something that's going to come to Major League Baseball? Like, are we going to see fans back streaking on the field or running across the field and hear those stories again of fans, you know, shouting offensive things at players? Or is this something that might be a little bit slower to come back to Major League Baseball?
I don't think we'll see that kind of stuff happen in Atlanta. I think that just because of the culture of like people in the South and Braves fans. I mean, obviously we know that Braves fans are not shy to throw things on the field. Usually that happens in the context of, you know, a decision going against them. It's not usually something visceral against like a certain player or something like that. My take on all this is much more broad philosophically, which goes all the way, it is related to the pandemic and the fact that we have lived our lives, and everybody, sports fans, athletes maybe less so, but a lot of people just essentially have been living like a digital life for a matter of a year or more, and not having a lot of that in-person interaction. And honestly, like, and I think with a lot of things that have happened, there's a feeling that people are sensing that there's not as much of like culpability for bad actions that you do. And on when you're online, especially, it's like you can just taunt somebody until your heart's desire, and nobody's going to come down on you. And then when you do that in real life, you know, that can lead, the taunts can then lead to physical abuses like spitting on somebody or something like that. And before you know it, you're essentially, it's like criminal activity that you're participating in. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, I think that like the people who do this are like pretty disgusting people who it's just like not right whatsoever. But I do think that just living our lives digitally, and I think that like part of coming back together as people and congregating and stuff like that, I think that that is a reason why we're seeing a lot of this bad behavior amongst fans take place.
So I wanted to take it in the direction of actually something that Trey Young tweeted about a couple of nights ago, or it may have been last night, honestly. It's been the type of weekend that days have blurred together as sleep schedules have been very erratic. But what I will say is he tweeted about the fan who ran onto the court. Now they're just looking for attention. And it stuck to me because I was like, what have we just had happen? We've had a year where everyone has been a lot of the time stuck in their house, stuck in a singular environment, not having the normal interactions that you would typically have. So, and you know, I feel it's one of those. I'm lucky in that I was married through the pandemic, so I always had someone to talk to you know, voice whatever was going on in my head with, but not everyone has that, and I fully understand that. And so I honestly wondered, when we're seeing all of these things happen with fan interactions at sporting events now, is this like a way of saying it, like a cry for help of like, hey, I haven't been getting attention, and so this is my time. I think I told you, Joe, about my first time being at a Braves game where I was sitting in front of a couple of guys who just were randomly yelling. I mean, random things too, and just at random times were just yelling out. And it was, I kind of joked that, well, they've been cooped up and haven't been able to just go outside and yell. Mm-hmm. And so you mix that with any interaction that fans have had with the game has been through a screen. Mm-hmm. If you want to throw popcorn at your TV, throw a water bottle at your TV, you could do that and probably go viral for it on some, you know, or the guys who run through their TVs after their team loses the Super Bowl, I think of. But changing that to being in person, and I think it's unfortunate that it's kind of brought out this dark side of people who feel that it's either okay or have just had this like bottled up and want to go to a sporting event and let it out. It's when I see it, I think, guys, do you not realize how thankful we should be that we're back at games, in arenas, in stadiums? And so to see these type of interactions go down, I just want to smack them upside their head and like, come on, you know.
I mean, Trey makes a really wise point there that I think he's right, that a lot of it, especially as it relates to like, you know, fans trying to get themselves on the court or interact with athletes in some way, even if it isn't like an antagonistic interaction. I do think that it probably is a lot of tension driven, and in a world where, you know, traditional ways to, you know, have a public spotlight on yourself, like through traditional like media platforms and things like that, now with like TikTok and just social media in general, it's like anybody can be a celebrity by doing any crazy thing. It reminds me of like the woman at the Hawks game who was doing the whole taunting of LeBron when they first came back. Like, I think that's totally what that was. She was trying to make herself a little celebrity, you know, get something out of that. I do think that has a big part of it. And it's a shame. It's a shame that they're kind of interrupting it for a lot of the other fans who, you know, are really just there to you know, watch great athletes, you know, do their thing and have a good time. And I feel like it gives a lot of fans a bad rap to see, you know, when one fan does something that like that, you can totally see why an athlete would, you know, take issue with a fan running on the court or something. And then it's like, you know, just pay, you know, it's just one of those things where you don't like to see it.
I think I'm honestly just shocked at it. And I think the reason why I kind of brought it up is because obviously the instances we're giving are from other sports outside of Major League Baseball. I'm honestly surprised because Major League Baseball was like the first sport or one of the first sports to say full capacity stadiums, that it hasn't happened there. Like, we haven't had the fans running onto the field. We haven't had any. I think of like Adam Jones situations where players going and being like, yeah, I had these things, these offensive things said to me, that instead it's happened. I guess where fans are closer, and maybe that's just the difference that it's made right now. It's just interesting to me in that way. And also just, I mean, obviously from a general sense, unfortunate that it's going on. And I think it was mainly wanting to bring it here as just a, please realize, you know, how special it is, how incredible it is to go to a game and to get to be around a whole bunch of people and to watch a live sporting event, that don't mess it up and don't mess it up for yourself by getting involved in something stupid.
And I'll be the first one to say, like, I have no issue, and I've done it before as a fan, to like boo the other team and like try to make it feel as hostile as possible. But like, obviously there's a line between, you know, shouting things that are like actually offensive, whether it be like racially or otherwise, versus, you know, just like, you know, you want to be in, you know, create an intimidating atmosphere. So there's like a fine line there. But, you know, I'm all about, you know, I'm a sports fan through and through. And so, you know, I like trying to, you know, I remember going out with friends, going to Hawks games, and like, they would put the fanatical, we were in like the fanatical fan section. They would put us, move us down right behind the opponent's bench so that we could, you know, make fun of them, try to like fake them out, like we're giving them a high five, and then pull our hand away, and then like, yeah, see them get mad, like that kind of thing. So I'm all about that kind of thing, but obviously keep it respectful. I think just overall getting these fans back together, it's just like one of the general, I think there's just going to be a little bit of friction in terms of resuming life as normal. I think it was always kind of maybe head in the sky to think that like all of a sudden, yeah, it's like we're going to snap our fingers and life is going to be exactly how it was. I think there's just, obviously there's going to be a little bit of friction and stumbling in terms of getting ourselves back to kind of normal order in society. But hopefully it happens sooner rather than later.
I think it was very much so head in the sky of me to think that when we all got back, that, you know, it was going to be, you know, very polite clapping and let's go, we're all thankful to be back here. And it's like, nah, we know reality is people are going to act how they want. And I think we also get reminded of, and players have to say that, hey, just because you buy that ticket doesn't allow you to just do whatever you want. And it seems like here recently that people have needed that refresher and that reminder of things.
Wet hot American summer 2021. It's just going to be wild. It's going to be insane. Anything else before we get out of here?
No, I think that's it. That was just, you know, kind of as a reminder, tonight we'll, like I said, we'll get to see Max Fried out there, finish up the series with the Nationals, go on and host the Dodgers, which we're going to get to, theoretically, if everything lines up right, Joe, we're going to get to see Trevor Bauer in Atlanta, which should be interesting. That Sunday game, I think, right now is lined up for it.
Mm, nice. Talk about fans. Yeah. Maybe if there was ever one case where the Braves fans are going to go crazy, it'll be a Trevor Bauer. So
yeah,
something to keep an eye on there.
But like always, everyone, thank you for watching us on Facebook Live. Thank you for checking us out on either the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Batter Up and find us. Subscribe, download, all of that fun stuff, as we always like you to, you know, make those numbers look really good for us so that we can eventually show this to our bosses and go on and do better things. But thanks again for watching, and you all have a great week.